Now, I'm going to take a couple of minutes to plug our show on Friday. Because we are taking part in the very successful Irish Music Month. Now, it's a collaboration between a load of independent stations around the country. I'm going to keep this as simple as possible. Last year, we were part of it as well, of course. We sent up our act and they did very well indeed. And many of the acts that are selected as finalists for the Irish Music Month have gone on to enjoy fantastic airplay, bigger gigs, and supporting international acts as well. So what's happened so far is that we invited the great public of the Northwest to send in those demo tapes. Now, they could have been a choir, a singular artist, a band, a duet, whatever it might be. So we had in excess of 70 entrants, and so many of them were so good. The judging panel managed to whittle that down to four. Now, our four acts have already each received or will receive a total of €875 of a prize, which is €650 plus €225 for their technical crew. And our four finalists will be performing live on Friday. And just to give you a sense of the quality of our finalists, I'm going to play little samples for you. Here's Zoe McCauley. Now, Zoe is a 16-year-old singer-songwriter from Dunloe. She is finalist number one. This is her track, Wait and See.
But then I think of the grander scheme. Won't think about every place I've been, 'cause I'm just a girl.
And that's a Wait and See. We're playing it in its entirety throughout the week, by the way, so I'm not being disrespectful to Zoe. Zoe will be performing that song live along with two other tracks. Tessio 2, they're a real up-and-coming duo from Derry. They're Jude McCandless and Callum Feeney. This is their track, Hang It.
Hang it on my bike. It's gonna be so.
Now, they are really, really good, as is Zoe, and really, really good live as well. Owen Ferry would be a name familiar to many of you out there. He's just 18 years of age. Seems like he's been around for ages. He's a singer-songwriter from Gwydor, and he's dropped this track into us, and it really is a pop powerhouse, I think.
I know that every time I try to call you, won't answer the phone.
There you have it. It has all the ingredients, doesn't it, for lots of airplay. And last but not least, Irish indie rock band The Afades. They've been regular guests over the years on Highland Radio and really starting to find their sound. And they are great. All right, so that's The Afades. They're also going to be performing live on Friday. It's broadcast on the radio, so if you're a regular radio listener, just lie back and enjoy it. Paul and Jimmy are going to be on stage with me and on Green Elm Theatre as we chat to our finalists. There'll be lots of other surprises as well, okay? So you can go and watch us do our show and listen to this music for free on Friday morning. Isn't that nice? Now, all you have to do is go to the On Green Elm website, which is... I'll go to the home website here. It's on greenon.com. It couldn't be any simpler than that. So on greenon.com, and then you go to What's On, which also is very simple. And we're the next What's On. It is Greg Hughes, the 9 till noon show live. So Greg Hughes from Highland Radio Donegal presents a live radio broadcast from On Green Elm Theatre for Irish Music Month. So you click book now, and you will see that you click book tickets now. And already people are booking tickets, which is great. As I said, I had no expectations here. We just wanted to take it out of the studio and get the acts onto a stage because it's a nice buzz. And people are booking tickets, which is fantastic. So if you want to be in the live audience, it's free. It's on Saturday morning between 9 and 12. Please go on to ongreenon.com and book your tickets. There's still tons of availability, but to be honest with you, it's great to see. It's great to see those... those seats being snapped up. Also, on Friday, we are giving away €10,000 on this show. And we're going to bring the trombola from here down to the stage because it is the conclusion of Highland Radio's Mega Summer Draw. We've £12,500 in total to give away. Lee Gooch will give away €2,500 on the Naughty Alarm Clock. And €10,000 will be given away on the 9 till noon show. And you can still get your tickets now. We don't know which ticket's coming out. If it's a high number, now's the time to get your ticket because someone doesn't have that ticket yet. Do you get me? So you're very much in with a chance if you get your ticket. Go to our website, highlandradio.com, click on Mega Summer Draw and answer a simple question and you can choose your tickets for fun, by the way. Please don't be doing stuff you can't afford. We don't want that either. But one ticket's just a tenner. You can group in with other people or do it yourself. 6 for 50, so you get an extra ticket. 10 for 80. Now, it is very, very plain on this. Some of these competitions, I just wonder what goes on in the background. I'm not suggesting any impropriety, but you just... It's very simple. You buy a ticket here. You get allocated a number, and I swear to you, that number goes straight into the draw drum. Every single number goes in there. They're all accounted for. Everybody has an even chance. So get your tickets online. You could win $2,500 with Lee or $10,000 with me. Now, also, you can give us a call here at the radio station, 07491 25000, and we can process your ticket order now. But it's $12,500. Get your tickets ASAP. And really interested to keep an eye on the tickets for the show on Friday. It's between 9 to 12. It's in Ongreanon. We've got fantastic live music over 3 hours. We'll have a bit of cracking conversation as well with Paul and Jimmy, and we'll chat to the artists. Maybe you want to support them or just want to go and see quality, top quality live music. Get in. There's something for everyone in that packed lineup. All right, okay. You need me to move on quickly, do you? Yep, okay, so I'll take this break early and then we'll come back with our next guest in 2 or 3 minutes. Now, the High Court has jailed secondary school teacher Enoch Burke for a third time, this for breaching a court order. Mr. Justice Michael Quinn said he was satisfied Mr. Burke was acting in breach of the permanent injunction granted a year ago and was in contempt of court. He ordered him to be committed again to Mountjoy Prison until he purchased his contempt. The judge listed the matter again for 11th of October, but said Mr. Burke could come into court at any point if he wanted to purge his contempt. But Mr. Burke told the judge he would answer to God for imprisoning someone for their religious beliefs. Peter Nolan is a barrister and joins us on the programme now. Peter, thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. So I suppose, look, lots of people, particularly those that will back Enoch Burke, will say that he's being jailed because of his views on transgenderism. Now, maybe that has what has led us to where we are now, but that is not specifically the reason for which he's in prison.
Absolutely not. There's no crime in relation to having an opinion on transgender or LYGP. It's a matter of personal opinion. If he says I don't agree with this, I don't agree with that, that's not the crime. The crime is basically there's no crime here. What happened was he was sacked from his job. He's now appealing that, and he was sacked on the basis that he wouldn't teach or wouldn't refer to some of the pupils in a certain way. And that's his choice. If he wishes to do that and stand on his beliefs, that's his choice. What he should have done is he should have he's now appealing the matter. He should have allowed the appeal to go through. If he felt his constitutional rights were being infringed, in other words, that his freedom of expression was being infringed, he should have taken an action against the school. The school are taking action against him. So he's approached it, in my view, entirely the wrong way. And what he's in jail for now is breach of a court order. And it's the only form of enforcement the civil courts have when an order is breached willfully. And the word, very, very important word, is willfully. If you willfully breach an order, say, I'm not doing that. And as he did the other day, he was told you are not to go onto the grounds at the gate of Wilson Hospital School. He did. And that's where he was arrested, walking around the grounds. Now, that's a willful fingers up, in essence, to the court. And therefore, the only remedy the court has is to attach and commit him. What we saw was him being attached, i.e., the guards are sent out. They bring him before the court. The court asks, are you willing to purge your contempt? He says no. Then he's committed to prison until he does. And the ball is in his court. Now, the only reason he's in prison today is because he's in contempt of a permanent injunction restraining him from entering onto the grounds of a private property called Wilson Hospital School. It would be the same if you had an injunction or I had an injunction. If you had an injunction against me, say that I was to not to go onto your land for any purpose whatsoever, and I continued to do it, you would expect the courts to do something. And the only thing the courts can do is impose a attachment and committal proceedings.
And just
against
that
me.
Point, Peter, because I mean, I heard some other journalists saying that this is like taking a sledgehammer to crack a nut. The bottom line is though, this nut has to be cracked, because if these types of orders aren't enforced, well, then they have no standing at all, because if you weren't to enforce it on Mr. Burke, then you couldn't justify enforcing it on anybody else.
Correct. And the problem is, I myself have acted in numerous attachment and committal applications, and it's amazing. The cough is greatly softened. If you spend a day or two in Castlereagh prison, I can tell you. However, Mr. Burke, and I do admire him for his fortitude and his belief in his position, he's quite happy to go to prison, it seems to me, which is a most unusual circumstance. But that's a matter for him again. And he, the ball is in his court, as I say. He must purge his contempt. He must go in and apologise and say, I will abide now by the order of court, and I will not attend at that school again. To interfere, by the way, he's interfering with the staff. He's causing difficulty, no doubt, for pupils and staff, regardless of what his beliefs are. And I would be very uncomfortable if I was a member of staff or a pupil having Enoch Burke walking around the grounds of the school and the guards attending on a regular basis to take him away. I mean, it might be a hammer to crack a nut. It's the only hammer we have.
Now, whilst
we've no other way of dealing with this.
Sorry, Peter. Whilst you and others might, admire his commitment, there's another fundamental part of this too, really, that I don't think is spoken about enough, in that this does not advance his position in any case, because he is in a process. He was sacked by the school, and people can disagree with that or not. And he's appealing that dismissal, and he's on full pay whilst
Correct.
It's being appealed. So,
correct.
In any circumstances, normally, if someone was sacked and were appealing that, you don't continue to turn up, because there is procedures in place and they're very well established. So his turning up is not really advancing his cause, because he's already engaging in an appeals process for his dismissal.
Correct, absolutely correct. And then on top of that, there are comments made about the standing of the judge. They've obviously done research in relation to this. His family are lawyers, are certainly involved in the law. Some of them are qualified lawyers. They've obviously done their research, and they then use the media attention to castigate the judge, who's simply doing his job and having the court order enforced. He has a procedure available to him, as everybody else has, when they are sacked. If they say they are unfairly dismissed, they have the procedures that are clearly in the statute available. If those procedures are then exhausted and you still believe that you were not fairly treated, you further procedures. So rather than doing what he's doing, making it a cause célèbre, making him the centre of everyone's attention, when in actual fact he hasn't exhausted all of the remedies available to him, and he's now sitting in jail on a totally false premise that somehow he's been victimised here by the courts because of his beliefs. He's not. He's in jail because he will not obey a lawful court order. He will not recognise the court's ability to make an order. Now, if that is to spread everywhere, then there'll be no remedies and there'll be anarchy, and you cannot have that. And the courts, I can assure you, this is our final remedy. This is, in my experience with attachment and committal applications, the court will do everything in its power not to impose this. They know this is a draconian relief. But the fact is, Enoch has left them with no alternative. And that's it. He's been given numerous chances. Will you stay away? Yes, I will. No. And then he goes and he breaches that, as he'd done willfully on last Friday or whatever it was. Mm. He went back onto the grounds as soon as the school had commenced its term.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the student's no longer there. The original principal is no longer there. It does.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't look well for him to be walking around the school grounds with a satchel and an umbrella around a school where young people are there and he's not wanted. It's not a good look, I don't think.
It's really embarrassing, actually. But I think he's beyond embarrassment, and they're blinded by some belief that they have been some way their beliefs have been attacked and undermined. That's not the case. He's free to go on any social media, any media, and even on your program, no doubt, if he rang you and say, "I believe the transgender is designated children," is wrong.
A bit of that is, Peter, which I don't understand as well, is like I've interviewed dozens of trans people over the years for different reasons or others, and I have never either felt the need to or had to refer to them as them or they. You know, I call them by their name, and I don't care if you're called Timbuktu. Like, in ordinary discourse in life, and it's not because I've refused to, that's not the point, I've never really had to say they or them. I just call people by their names.
I'm exactly the same. Yeah. I've met numerous transgender people, and that is actually the way out of it, is that all Enoch had to do was say, listen, I'm not going to use the word they, them. I'll use the name Gary or whatever. I'll use that name. I'll call him by the first name. Is that a problem for the school? I probably wouldn't have been. But no, he had to make an issue out of this that is an issue that's gone way beyond where it is now, and he's now victimising himself. He's now the victim. He's the victim. He's a victim because he shot himself in the foot. Mm. He's the one that's causing the problem. He's the one that's breaching the court order. He's the one that's in jail because of his own behaviour. That's simple as that. Mm. And no matter what way they turn it or twist it, that's it. The courts have a duty to the citizens of Ireland in civil matters to maintain their power and their jurisdiction. Otherwise, the whole thing becomes unenforceable, and anarchy reigns, and people can do what they want because there's no sanction. I can do what I want, but that's not the way it is.
And people are perfectly entitled to, and many people actually are also. Opposed to transgenderism and or maybe the acceptance or the teachings of it in school, there's lots of people would agree on that. There's no doubt about it, and I think really society is actually still working that out where we'll actually end up. I don't know what he refused to do in the school. Refused to call them they or them. That sounded more like either the student has to leave or I'm leaving. You know, now that's going right back to the very start of it. But he was either saying, well, that student has to use the name they were given at birth and they have to act as the gender they were at birth, or I'm leaving. So it was right from the very, very beginning, it was a no-win. And he's got to the point now.
It's absolutely banging his head off the legal brick wall that he's now continuing to do so. And the only thing that gets injured when you do that is your own head. Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what's going to happen to him. He's not going to win this. He can't win it. It's unwinnable. You only fight the battles you win. There's another way of dealing with this. He should have dealt with it that way. He now feels no doubt that they cannot step back and lose face now in relation to their position to date, which is absolutely ridiculous. Because their position to date, if they stand back and look at it, is, will you conform with this order? The simple answer is yes, and that does not stop him from proceeding with his appeal, proceeding to vindicate his rights of employment, and proceeding then to take whatever action he needs to do that. He can say, okay, I'm sorry, I won't go on the grounds again, but I'll prosecute my appeal and do all the rest of it as I'm entitled to do under law. But he hasn't done that, and the reason his appeal has been stopped is because he's taking all these proceedings in the High Court because of this and because of that, and they can't proceed with the appeal until those proceedings are dealt with. So it's entirely and utterly the man's fault. And I thought he did seem to me to have a modicum of intelligence, as did his family, but obviously they're now been blinded by whatever belief or prejudice they have or believe they have in relation to this matter.
I'm not sure if it was Enoch or his younger brother interviewed them on this show in relation to homeschooling, and it was a very educational and informative conversation, and they're clearly a very intelligent people. Well, just finally, Peter, I know your time's precious, but he's also being ordered to pay €700 per day. Now, there seems to be some confusion as to who who tries
to... The problem with
that is... Why at this day and age are we so confused as to who would claim that or enforce
Well, the problem with that is that the fine is a criminal sanction. It's not a civil sanction. So before, at the moment, he's before the court on a civil, on an injunctive basis, which is a civil remedy that's been granted against him. Now, the fact that 700 euros or whatever it is per day he's been told to pay or per week, I'm not sure what it is, that's a criminal sanction. So therefore, the issue now arises, how can you cross over from a criminal sanction and enforce a payment of a fine under the Payment of Fines Act, which only deals with criminal matters, in a civil matter? But what you could do, is you could attach his earnings. So he's on full pay. So what they could do is, okay, we're going to get an attachment of earnings order from the court and say we're taking 700 euros per week from your pay now, Enoch, on foot of the order. That's what they could do, but they haven't done that. So the court did criticise the school for not advancing that. What I read in the judgment, it was why haven't you made attempts to obtain the 700 euros per day? And plus all this, just one other thing I want to say, this is costing the taxpayer a fortune in guards, prisons, everything, court hearings, court attendance. It's just beyond a joke in my view at this point. And really, it's going nowhere. He's going to lose this. He's not going to advance his cause in any way, if there is a cause there. And he's not going to enamour himself with anybody because of his approach to this. Mm. The 700 euros a day, that can be dealt with in a different way again, and they can avoid the tangle of criminal and civil contempt, which is tangled in now at the moment.
We see people who are, you know, victims of some of the worst crimes who get... get deferred sentences or probation or whatever it might be. And for most right-thinking people, when you see someone with 1,000 images of child sexual abuse walking free from court, not without sanction, but free from court, and then you see Enoch Burke in prison, it doesn't make sense, but there's no alternative.
There's apples and oranges there, because the first one is a criminal matter.
Yes.
And there's criminal contempt, which you get a jail sentence for. That's not what this is. But if it's a criminal matter, then you're entitled to be sent to prison as a punishment or for rehabilitation. In a civil matter, having exhausted all, I've no doubt the court exhausted all previous remedies and all gave him every opportunity. The only way that they can enforce an order of the court that is blatantly and willfully been ignored and laughed at by Mr. Burke is to attach and commit him to prison until he purges his contempt for the order of the court, not for the issue of transgenderism and all the rest of it. He is simply in breach of an order of the court, and he has to purge that contempt. That's what he has to do. Okay. So they can tangle it up in any way they want, and they can come on social media and say all of these things. That is not the case. It's very simple. He's in breach of an order. Are you going to stop being in breach of an order now, Mr. Burke, or are you not? And if he keeps saying, no, I'm not, well, then fine. The court has no option but to say, well, off you go, back to prison until you do.
And that has to be independent of ideology and agenda. You know, it can't be conflated with the subject matter, because the reason he's in prison is separate almost to that. Peter, thanks as always for your insight. Peter Nolan there, who is a barrister, of course, and says he respects his commitment to it, but on basic law, he has to go to prison because he's not complying with this order. Get your views into us on that 086 60 25,000. We're going to be in the garden with Paul a little later on, very shortly, in fact. So any questions on your gardens or your flowers or your pots or your trees or your bushes, get in touch with us right now. We'll get those questions answered for you. A caller said, sad to see poor Enoch Burke return to prison. Watched the first committal and 6 guardi around him walking with his hands in his pockets. They were probably on promotion. But I mean, if any of us tried the same crack in the courts, we would end up with the same sort of the same treatment, it seems. Greg, it looks like you want to emphasise what side you're on with regard to Enoch Burke, much as you would like to point out what he was jailed for. It is for standing up for his rights to ignore someone that wants to change his or her name to a cat or something else that will distrust his class. But the problem... So if it is about that, firstly, it's his choice whether he refers to someone as they or them. I've never, in conversation with anyone, had to sort of say his, her, or not knowingly anyway. As I say, I've interviewed dozens of trans people, and using their pronouns, it's never come up. When someone is put through to me here, I don't know what their name is. We've had some great names, but you also get names that are a little bit left of centre and all that kind of stuff. It's just a name, right? If he's dead against transgenderism, the only actual solution is either he left the school or the transgender child left the school, because it is what it is. You know, so I'm not taking sides. I'm just trying to present the facts as they are. Mr. Enoch Burke is simply protecting children from abuse. The Irish judiciary are the ones who, for many decades, protected the paedophile priests and ignored the suffering of their child rape victims up until the last couple of decades when child sexual abuse became a public scandal. The Irish judiciary have learned very little and cannot think for themselves, and that is a result of English common law for you. Wouldn't agree with Burke's religious views, but fair play for standing up for his beliefs and taking on the woke agenda. Says the listener there. Thank you for that. 086 60 25,000. They, them agenda is nonsense, says Dahi. Teachers shouldn't be made to address students by their pronouns. Totally ridiculous. All students have names, schools and principals are at fault. Again, Dahi, the only thing I can say is I don't actively go around calling people he, she, they, them, I, or whatever it might be. So, I mean, I could successfully teach a class, I think, without referencing to anybody's pronouns for that matter. But look, I respect your point of view, and there's a great deal of sympathy out there for Mr. Burke. My reason for speaking to Mr. Nolan is to actually, from a legal perspective, make it absolutely clear as to why Mr. Burke is in prison in the first place and what he might have to do, and he's not going to do, but what he might have to do to be back at home with his family. We have stepped out of the studio metaphorically. We've stepped into the garden. It's quite nice. It's dry. It's breezy. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballacthur Garden Centre, Letterkenny, is in it with us. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Greg.
It's a funny old summer, isn't it? Because, from a farming perspective, and I think it kind of depends where you are in the county, the growth has been really quite poor. I wonder if people noticed, as I say, dependent where you are, not having to cut the grass as much. But as I say, even for farmers, maybe not getting that second or certainly not a third cut of silage.
Yes, absolutely. No, funny, our own bit of ground there was cut on Friday or Saturday now, but the second cut definitely wasn't what it should have been.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just lack of sun changes.
Hay or silage or bales?
Bales. Silage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But that being said, we're now heading into a few days where the temperatures are going up again.
Yes.
So we're going to have less moisture, more sunshine, and temperatures in the 20s for certainly from Thursday heading into Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
So a late spurge?
Hopefully a late surge, all right. I get grass growing a bit better, get sort of the lawns looking healthier and stuff like that, if you know what I mean. But that'd be nice even to get out into the garden for the weekend, hopefully if it lasts that long.
Yeah, well, we're in September. The Indian summer, in what we might expect, is not going to happen. So let's see what we can be at. The veg garden now. Where is people's veg at?
Veg, you know, a lot of people still harvesting. A lot of stuff like your potatoes are already, your tomatoes are flying. Though I see your onions and that should all be coming on perfectly well. A lot of people even sort of fruit their apples starting to... Apples are starting to come into their own now as well, and it won't be long until they're ready.
And also, too, there's stuff we can be planting for the winter. Now, some of those people will be in the know, right? But others, they might want to get into it. So... your garlic, onions?
Yeah, garlic now. Garlic's sort of a 18-month crop, if you know what I mean. So if you plant it now, you'd be into sort of, well, sort of this time next year, you should be ready, if you know what I mean. So you're overwintering it, your onions and even some cabbages there. So there are plenty of stuff you can get normal.
So where do you get onions or garlic from if you want to plant it?
Yeah, generally most garden centres would carry the wee sets. Yeah. It might be a wee bit early. In the next few weeks, they'll be getting them in.
Right,
like most garden centres this week are getting in the spring bulbs, like your daffodils and all that kind of carry on.
Yeah, and the reality is regardless of blips in the weather, positive blips, we are heading into the autumn. So what should people or can people be doing with their beds?
Generally, beds, give them a wee freshen up, trim back anything. Most shrubs are sort of past flowering now, nearly are getting there. Trim the after the finished flowering, you can trim them back if you want to. Just freshen up the beds, even if you have mulch on them or that, add to it, and just kind of use this period of good weather to sort of set yourself up so you're not sort of gardening the winter time in the bad weather.
And if people are wondering, well, what do I cut back? It's, I suppose, if it's scraggly, if it's dying.
Pretty much, I just give it a wee general tidy up, if you know what I mean. A lot of people this time of year, a lot of plants have gone to seed too, so this is an opportunity to actually harvest some of that.
How would one harvest seed?
Generally, you'll see the seed heads coming on the plants. Whenever the naturally at this time of year, they dry out on the plant. So what you people would normally do is sort of bring that in over semi-dry, hang it upside down in the shed, maybe like elastic band, brown paper bag under it. So then the seeds sort of naturally fall out.
And then the seeds can be planted next year.
Yeah, plant them next year. Store them somewhere dry. A lot of people store them in jam pots, stuff like that. And a good tip for that there is actually, you know the wee sachets and stuff come with your runners?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the silica gel. Yeah,
they soak up moisture.
Yeah, put a few of them under your seed. And then that'll actually preserve them much better because that's taking the moisture out of the seed.
If I don't have those, would rice do it or is that a myth?
Yes, put it on beside your phone.
Roses, one of the plant stroke flowers that are always popular but always spawns lots of questions. So what's the state of our roses at the moment?
Unfortunately, this hasn't been a great year for roses because just the amount of rainfall and everything else and the lack of sunshine, they haven't maybe performed as well as they should. But should still flower on into almost, you always hear tell of roses in the snow, so they almost go up into the winter time.
Yeah.
So they should still be flowering well. Any disease sort of foliage at this time of year or black spot, now you can remove that just for the look of them.
Yeah.
And just even give them a wee late feed might help burst them on if we do get a bit of good weather.
Yep, there has been some hedge cutting going on through the summer where it's necessary, you know, lines of sight and all that kind of stuff. But hedge cutting season is right, we're in it now, aren't
we? From the 1st September, you're allowed to cut away. So we are, generally it's to do a bird's nesting basically, so no bird's nesting this time of year, so now is an opportunity to get at your hedges and get them cut back if it's a job you've been putting off for a wee while.
Yeah, and is it the landowner always responsible for the roadside hedges?
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah.
But probably the council do take it upon themselves.
You do see them
pose danger, if you know what I mean.
For sure. Okay. So get your hedges cut. But also, if you're a motorist, keep your eyes out because you might come around a corner and there's a hedge cutter there. Normally, the guys are great. They have signs up and that type of stuff.
Yes, but there will be a lot in the road for the next wee while, I would say.
I put in a laurel hedge about a year ago. It's taking off good now after feeding with bone meal. When would I trim it to thicken it, or should I just let it grow a bit longer until they're all the same height? Thanks.
Yes, quite a common thing to do is actually take the top of your hedge and it encourages the bush out from the bottom. So at this time of the year, I would nearly tend to leave it until the spring. Now with the 1st of April, just whenever it starts to actively grow, I would just nip off the bare minimum of the top. That stops it growing up for that year and actually encourages the bush out from the bottom. So you'll have a better hedge long term.
Mm.
So I would tend to leave it to the spring now, but give it a wee light trim then.
Another listener wants to know, do strawberry plants in baskets have a season? Mine are dying as soon as they start to develop. The fruit start to grow, but then it dies. They also have multiple heads on them. What am I doing wrong? I did feed them.
A lot of times strawberries, especially in a basket, because they're
you just move 6 inches closer to the pole. I know you have your routine, but I'm struggling to hear you properly.
Yeah, sorry.
And do you know what happens if you're in the car with the car noise, the road noise?
It
just drops the volume down a little bit. So go ahead, Paul. Sorry.
Basically, in a basket, sir, you have a finite amount of nutrients in it. I know they said they fed them and all, but generally, they're through the summer season, so they may be running out of steam. So them plants might be just running out of steam for this year because they are a seasonal crop, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
But the best thing you do as the plant starts to do that, they start putting out what's known as runners, which are big, long, sort of stringy bits coming out of the strawberry plants, and you'll see wee roots in them. So if you actually just even YouTube it there, it's actually very possible to make new plants out of them at this time of year. So you can actually increase your crop that way.
Is it possible too, then it sounds that when they're going through what feels like must be the most intensive feeding time as they're creating fruit, that they're exhausting the nutrients in that soil?
Yes, I feel in a basket that's usually what happens, all right.
Yeah, okay. My apple trees didn't flower this year at all. Last year I had a good crop. What would be happening there, I wonder?
What would be happening there? Generally, it was a bad year this year at the start of the year. Whenever the sort of apple trees did come into flower, there was bad weather and they didn't last long enough on them to get pollinated. What you do is generally, come the springtime now with St. Patrick's Day or so, give it a feed with something like potash, something fairly high in potassium, and that should encourage it to produce flowers and then produce fruit. If it's an older tree as well, it's a good idea to sort of, if there's grass growing up against it, remove that a bit and just do a wee bit of mulch around it and it'll help it go on that way.
It's interesting too because you just wonder, you just wonder if the seasons are changing a bit up here.
Yes,
you particularly would. Up into the northwest. I just wonder if the way things are happening globally, if the trend is that that high pressure doesn't quite get in on us, that the low pressure remains dominant. You just wonder if, because there's been two summers now really effectively, for example, where the sea hasn't died down at all.
Yeah.
You know, even when the wind drops, there's still a great swell in the sea. And we're talking about, you know, poor harvesting results for the farming community. We're talking about apple trees that have bad starts to the year. It'd be interesting if next year is again like this year, if that is really the change to our weather.
Yeah, funny, I was reading someone last night, actually, it was about, they reckon there are changes going on in the Gulf Stream, the way the sort of thing circulates around us, that. And if that does sort of shift itself a bit, how it could very much leave us colder and would just... like say the low pressures dominate.
It just seems particularly that further north you go in Ireland, because parts of Ireland had really a reasonable summer. Where can you buy calla lily bulbs and snowdrop bulbs?
Most garden centres you would get them. Alright,
what are they?
Sorry,
what are they?
Snowdrops, obviously, you know, the wee white flowers you see. Aye. So they begin this time of year, so there would be snowdrops that can be, for a few years it was very hard to get native ones. It was generally ones were coming in from different markets, but now people are sort of bringing on the native ones again in a big way. So obviously if you're going to them, they'd be the best ones to have. The calla lily bulbs, once again, garden centres, but it'd be closer to the spring. You'd be planting them out. So
we were walking through ours yesterday. And by the way, Paul made a wee donation when he came in, which is all very nice and goes into the fund. Thanks, Paul. But there's a particular plant that's present in ours. And it's not... It's not normally there.
Yeah.
But apparently, and... I'm not going to say anything bad, but don't answer any questions, mums and dads. Apparently this plant is planted around homes in Britain where there's swinging activity.
Oh, right. Yes, I've heard tell of that.
Now,
right.
I don't know what the plant is.
Pampas grass was today. Oh, yes.
You seem to be well abreast of this. What is that?
That's pampas grass. I think it was more in the 70s and 80s. Was associated with
so they grow it around houses, and that was an indication that this was a swinger's house.
Yeah, I think so.
And there's a patch of pampas grass in Ards.
Right. So make of that what you will.
Well, I had a look around. I couldn't see anything untoward going on. But anyway, regarding cutting back Lelandi trees, they haven't been cut in 10 years. They're about 20 feet high. If I cut them, will they die?
They won't die, no. But you have to be quite careful cutting them. Because the Lelandi foliage is only really in the last 2 inches on the outside.
You can leave them looking very bare.
Exactly. If you cut back into the brown foliage and say, that's not going to green up again. So what the best thing to do there would be trim it back a bit this year. Hope that it greens up a wee bit. Like, obviously, don't trim back through the green. And hope that it greens up a wee bit deeper in. And then sort of take it back gradually, year by year.
Is these is this the hedgerow that's high maintenance has kind of gone out of favour a little bit?
Yes, it has totally gone out of favour.
Is it because of the maintenance?
Exactly. It's because of the growth rate.
But you won't
get
a better hedge.
No, absolutely not. It's like almost like a living wall, almost. But they do take a lot of maintenance, chatting 3-4 years, and they can get 3 or 4 times a year, and they can get out of hand very quickly.
And once they get very big, right, if you trim them back and it's bare, do they grow back out again, though?
No. Generally, they don't. You see, if you cut it back into the brown foliage, they will not green up again.
Ooh.
So that's where the problems start.
And are they deep rooters, I wonder?
They're not particularly deep rooted, no, because they're like most of the conifer trees, they're where they naturally come from, sort of in the frost, and that they keep the roots fairly close to the surface.
I mean, they're, in terms of hedge, I mean, you're not going to get better, but as I say, it's the maintenance of them.
Yes, you have to be careful removing them as well, as I've learned to my detriment before. Right. In urban gardens, a lot of the time, the roots can get around pipes and stuff. And if you pull that, you could end up pulling a water main or something there. So if you're removing roots, you have to be quite careful.
Why are my rhubarb leaves yellow?
Your rhubarb leaves are yellow probably because there's not been enough sunshine this year. It's really, they're a very, very greedy plant. They like both a lot of manure and stuff like that there, and they like to take a lot of energy out of the sun. They haven't got that energy from the sun this year, so I fear that's probably the reason. Another reason possibly is because if it's an older established rhubarb plant, it may have become too congested.
Yeah.
They like to be divided every so often. So now whenever you get into the springtime, you could actually dig it up and divide it and replant it again.
What's the fluffy stuff on the stems of my indoor plants?
Powdery mildew, I would say. Right. Without seeing it, I would say it would be most likely cause. It's generally caused by high humidity and maybe not enough airflow through the house. So it would be so... If you're trying to deal with it, generally a preventative thing would be to actually increase the airflow. Maybe if it's something in the window, so that open the window every so often.
Yes.
And in terms of an old wives' tale or a home remedy, put mouthwash on it. If you dilute the mouthwash to 3 parts water and 1 part mouthwash, and just give it a wee rinse. That should help keep it away.
How can I tell if my soil quality is good?
Soil quality being good, generally you can get kits in garden centres that would be quite inexpensive that would test the fertility of your soil and your the pH of the soil. And if you're starting out in the garden and going to spend a good bit of money on it, it's a good idea to test your soil to actually see the qualities of it. So generally go to your garden centre, get kits. And as far as I know, actually the farming group down the road here, Chagas, of actually a soil testing thing if you want a more comprehensive thing.
I was thinking that. That'd be quite interesting. A caller wants to know, will pampas grass grow by the coast?
Yes, quite well.
Okay, so, okay. Don't know why they want to know that.
No, I don't know that now.
How to stop my dog digging up my garden? Which the good thing about that is it's their own dog and it's their own garden.
Yes, that's not so bad. Yes, can be quite an annoying habit, all right. Dogs are creatures of habit. And they tend to go back to the same spot, digging up a lot, if you know what I mean. So traditionally, they don't really like orange peels, orange stuff. So if you get like orange essential oils and spread them in that, it might encourage them to go away. So it might, or even the old-fashioned cayenne pepper too.
Yes.
Give them a wee pepper spray and they might keep away from that area.
Cola wants to know, where can I get pampas grass?
Yes, we have loads of it down there. Yes, well, we do.
Is it a big seller?
Oh, it is. It's quite popular. So it is now. So plenty of pampas grass about. So there is.
Right, you're going to be back again because we're still in the throes of it.
Oh, absolutely. I know. Still plenty to be done in the garden.
Okay. Listen, Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. And people can always call into your garden centre.
Absolutely.
The wonderful array of garden centres we have. And just like the powdery stuff on a plant, bring a photo in, show your phone.
Yes, absolutely. And phones are a great asset. Yeah. So they are these days now with all the pictures of the problems.
Yeah, exactly. And you use Google Maps as well too, don't you? Yeah. In some advice scenarios, which is really quite amazing.
Absolutely. Google Earth's great because you can actually look into a person's garden and you can even measure from that, so you don't actually have to go out and look.
Isn't that fantastic? I think it's amazing. That's technology for you, Paul. Thanks so much. Thanks again for your donation to Cancer Care West. Really appreciate it. That's Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballacdur Garden Centre, Letterkenny. As we read earlier on, a quarter of primary school aged children experience online bullying. This according to a new report. Philip Arneil is head of education and innovation at CyberSafe Kids. He's with us now. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us, Philip. And we can talk around the report, but just to sort of frame it from my perspective, Philip, you know, obviously, as you can imagine in this job, I do lots of interviews on these types of surveys, and it seems to be a worsening situation. And we seem to be observing it. But I don't know what you think, Philip. We don't seem to be doing anything meaningful other than talking about it.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. I think to say we're doing nothing meaningful is maybe a step too far. I mean, there are changes of, you know, there feels like certainly in the last couple of years there's been more awareness of this. We've been reporting on this kind of data now for 8 years. There's definitely more societal awareness. I think we've seen these kind of grassroots movements around the use of smartphones in schools and school communities coming together to try and address that. We've also seen the establishment of the Online Safety Commissioner and Commissioner Mann. You know, so these are welcome developments. But, you know, as we're moving forward with these kind of things, as you can see from the report today, you know, 82% of 8 to 12-year-olds still have their own social media or instant messaging accounts. So kids are already on there. They have the access. They have, in many cases, unrestricted access. 35% of 8 to 12-year-olds can go online whenever they want. And that rises up to 61% for the 12 to 14-year-olds in secondary schools. And they're not prepared fully and sufficiently for what they're going to encounter when they go online, and particularly when they're accessing these kind of apps and platforms that are not designed for them.
I think too, Philip, when we talk about what happens online, maybe it's a generational thing, Philip. I don't know what age you are. It doesn't matter. But say, for instance, for me, there's the real world, okay? And I function and live in the real world. And then there's the online world that I probably spend too much time on. But it's a clear, I can distinguish that clearly. I think 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, there isn't that distinction. So 63% of them are in this space without telling a parent or guardian if they've been upset. And many of them are. 46% of girls are being bullied. 6 out of 10 of them probably aren't telling their parents, 30% of boys. And we're allowing them free access to this space. 61% go online whenever they have. 20% have no rules about being online at home. And that could simply be switch your PlayStation off at 9, will you? So, you know, this is their actual world. I don't think younger people are differentiating as much as older people might be between on and offline.
No, they don't. And you know, we've for the last 3 years, we've had a campaign around safer internet called Same Rules Apply, which is exactly that message. And the message is very simple. The online and the offline worlds should not be distinguished as some different entity in the sense of what is common sense parenting, what is common sense behavior in the offline world should also be applied to the online world. Because actually, if you heard that 61% of 12 to 14 year olds can do whatever they like when they leave the house, you would be really genuinely shocked and people would be up in arms and this has to stop. But 61% of 12 to 14 year olds in secondary school can go online whenever they want. And actually, you could argue that the risks and harms potentially that young people will come across in the online world are way, way, way beyond what they're going to encounter walking down to the shop to buy a pint of milk.
For sure, and that could be the commissioning of hang out with their friends. Commissioning of personal images, blackmail, all very illegal. But like the statistic that was in there as well, and again, this is where I think we need to think like young people and not differentiate between an on and offline. The amount of young people that have been approached by a stranger online. I made the analogy earlier on. If a young person came back from school and say, "Mom, I went into Letterkenny Shopping Centre and this fella came up to me and he sort of asked where I was. He asked what age I was. He asked where was I from. He asked if I had a boyfriend, right? I'd get a text into this show about some stranger approaching children. There probably would be a complaint to An Garda Síochána Síochána. But that's happening to so many young kids online, and we actually don't even know it's happening, only for the results of a survey like this, because we know it's, we don't know, because 63% of children probably won't tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the most damaging phrases in real life, IRL, because actually, as you've said very clearly, the online world is real life for children and young people. And the reality as well is that a lot of this contact is actually not the sort of traditional stranger danger that you're talking about. You know, kids are contacted and groomed online, and the purpose of that is to get intimate images and videos of those children. So there's actually no need to actually physically meet them at all. But of course, the audience, the amount of people who out there who are potentially trying to contact minors is much greater than you're going to encounter in a park in Letterkenny or at Letterkenny Shopping Centre. So this is why, you know, when we're talking about the online world, we've got to stop making the distinction with the offline. We've also got to then apply the same common sense rules to parenting and to education of children and young people that we would apply in the offline world. It's absolutely vital.
Yeah, and I think too, we constantly blame schools or government or whatever, and we don't want them overreaching in certain aspects of our life. But listen, that's where some change is potentially happening. Whether we want to face it or not, this survey lays bare the lack of oversight and responsibility we as parents, guardians and caregivers are actually doing. So sometimes it's easier to criticise lawmakers or the powers that be, when I think really, Philip, this, we need to be introspective on this one and say, well, what are we doing? What's in our control?
Yeah, I think it's both. I, you know, this is a societal problem, and so it needs a societal solution. So yes, parents and guardians have a responsibility. Yes, the education system has to step up. But also, you know, social media companies and online service providers have to be held to account. They have to be properly regulated. There has to be transparency around who's using the platforms. Mm-hmm. There has to be,
And we have to go, Philip, but I know what you're saying. The greatest resistance to proving people are of age to be on these websites is coming from adults, because they exactly. Don't want to give their information. So it's not kids, it's adults that don't want this information to be shared with social media companies, because they don't want their privacy encroached on. And that, they're saying, well, then the collateral damage here is what's happening to our kids. And people might not like me saying it, but that's the way it is. Philip, thank you. Philip R. Neal, Head of Education and Innovation at Cyber Safe Kids. We're off. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great Tuesday. We've another packed show already taking shape for you tomorrow. John Bresson's up around the northwest after the news at 12, which will be read to you by Donna Marie.